Your video series, Running the Rapids, makes the comparison of raising children with whitewater rafting. Now, that's a vivid illustration. Could you give an example of advice for a parent going through what you call Class 5 Rapids, a rebellious teen?
Oh, sure. Well, the whole thing about whitewater rafting and that analogy is an interesting one because, you know, you do go through these Level 5 rapids, you know, and the interesting thing is after the rapids, guess what? You hit calm water again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think you've got that problem solved, and the guide says, all right, everybody hang on. We got some more coming. And so living with a teenager is probably analogous to watching waves on the ocean. You know, they come in segments. And you got a kid who's rebellious. He's the kid that all of a sudden changes before your eyes.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden he gets smart mouth to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask him to do some simple things. He says no. Sunday morning, all of a sudden, getting him out the door to church is impossible. He says, I don't like any of those geeky people down there. And all of a sudden, you and your husband, or you and your wife, or maybe you're going it alone single, you're looking in the mirror saying, you know, I don't get it. This kid used to be a great kid to be around. And all of a sudden, he's turned. And no matter what I say, I'm wrong, and we fight about everything. And so when you're in that white water, Skip, you really need to have some principles you can hang your hat on. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, Running the Rapids, and did the video series by the same name, because parents, quite frankly, don't know what to do. And I've just tried to make it clear and simple that the parent must remain in healthy authority over their son or their daughter, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to learn to respond rather than react. And most of us, quite frankly, as parents, I got news for you. We react. And on top of that, we live in a world where, you know, permissiveness reigns and people can do what they want to do. And kids today view themselves as social equals with their parents.
That's right.
So there's all kinds of things that contribute to that whitewater experience. But my promise to parents in this book is, you know what? You sit down and read this book from cover to cover, you're going to say, essentially, you know what? I'm ready for him.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what comes my way, I think chubby little Kevin Lehman is going to help me get through these turbulent years called adolescence.
Kevin, you advise know the river, know the riders, and know the risks. So let's go through a few important topics. What's so dangerous about those adolescent years?
Well, I call them the hormone group. You know, with young kids, I call them, I just flat out say we've seen the enemy and they are small. and they're unionized. But by the time they get to the hormone group, the dangerous part about Skip is the hormones are raging. I call them the critical years. I mean, you have adults listening to us right now who are shaking their heads saying, oh, yeah. Because during those critical years, it only takes a couple of minutes. To do something really foolhardy that you end up paying for the rest of your life. That's what's rough about the teenage years. But what I find is that parents refuse to come alongside of their kid.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean, if you think back to your teenage years, and I'll think back to mine at the same time, okay? And think about the music that you liked.
Mm-hmm.
What's the probability of a parent saying, oh, man, I love that music you're listening to.
Minimal at best.
Yeah. But see, I think it's a smart parent that says, hey, who sings that song? I love the beat in that music. Now, I'm telling you, the beat might be a beat that wants you to leave the car. But you have a choice, parent, of either engaging your kid at his level with things that he's interested in or not. And I think what happens today is kids, especially during the teenage years, feel alienated by their parents. All their parents ever do is rag on them for how they dress, how they talk, their spotty church attendance, their grades in school. You know, I think it's a smart parent that says, hey, you know, I was thinking the other day, in 15 months, you're going to be able to get a driver's permit. Dad, it's 14 months. Oh, yeah, but see, my point is that I think you've got to position yourself and say, listen, I'm on your team here. I want you to drive the family car. I'm not sure I want to call State Farm and tell them you're going to drive it because it's going to cost me a fortune. But see, kids need to see the parent on their side of the river, so to speak. And so, parents, when you say, know the river, know the rider, hey, parents, you've been down the river.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when a simple pimple seemed like Mount St. Helens? You remember saying to your parents, you never let me do this, you never let me do that. You've been down that road. And all I'm saying is, it's a tumultuous, whitewater-like experience. And so they're all over the place. So you tell me, parents, and again, you don't need a PhD to figure this stuff out, Skip. If the kids are all over the place, and we represented a line, it would be up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. All right, parents, what's your role in this thing? Your role, you know the rider. The rider is your son. You know the river, you've been there. So the rider, either your daughter or your son's all over the place, what do you need to be? The perfect straight line? No. But you need to be a line, a linear line that shows a similarity of a straight line. So the kids, now I hope you're, hold on to your wheel now if you're driving. So the kids will have something to rebel from. Because your kids are going to rebel in all probability, if not outwardly, at least inwardly, to some of the things that you as parents say to your kids. And if you handle those things right, you're going to end up in smooth water, and you're going to get through adolescence, and so is your son or your daughter, without hurting themselves or others.
So, Kevin, why do you say know your children? I mean, don't parents know their children from living with them?
No, they don't know their children. That's the whole point of this book, that, you know, most kids today come home from school, and they do what? Do they hang around the kitchen and say, hey, listen, Mom, let me tell you about what happened today in school. What happens is most kids come in, and the parents start the investigation.
Yep.
Okay, honey, what'd you do in school today? Nothing.
Yep.
Teenager, where you been? Out. What'd you do? Nothing. I'm telling you, one of the most profound things in this book, Going the Rapids, is, hey, parents, don't ask your kid questions. Now, the people listening to us, Skip, right now say, Lehman, you're out of your head. If I don't ask him a question, he's not going to tell me anything. Wrong. If you shut your mouth, parent, just shut your mouth. Don't ask him any questions. Believe it or not. And I would invest a couple of my children on this statement, plus my wife, that it's absolutely true. If you just button it up, your son, your daughter, will begin to slowly share with you what's really going on in their life. What I'm seeing, Skip, is that most kids come home, and after that interrogation, they go to their room,
yes,
and they close their door. And they get on the computer, or they, you know, they get on the Internet, or they get on the phone. The point is that you have an opportunity to have a relationship with this son or this daughter. And what you have to understand as a parent is your kid needs you, and he wants to have a relationship with you. But if all you're doing is hammer him all the time, I got news for you. He's going to avoid you. And quite frankly, if I was a kid, I'd avoid you too.
So talk a little bit about time. Parents listening to this are going to think, well, how much time is this going to require of me at the end of my day to integrate with them?
Well, it takes all kinds of time because the hormone group is weird, okay? Let me say this. They're weird. They're weird people. They dress weird. They talk weird. They roll their eyes in slow motion. And by the way, when your kid rolls her eyes, just say, oh, honey, would you do that again? Well, they do it in slow mo. You know, humor them a little bit. And here's the thing with kids. They'll come in your bedroom at 10:45 at night. So they're supposed to be in bed at 10, okay? And they've already been in bed, but all of a sudden they want to talk. But this is what I've learned in rearing 5 kids. When they want to talk, you better be ready. I know you got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You got to work like the rest of us. But you know what? Those kids are going to open up at the weirdest times. They're raccoon-like, okay? They like the late hours. And if your kid starts to open up, all I'm saying, parent, is you better sit there on the bed and talk with them. And you take advantage of those things, and you, as I call it in my book, you slip them a commercial announcement. Now, what do I mean by slipping a kid a commercial announcement? Whatever you, your values are, folks, whatever you hold dearest to your heart, you got to impart them to your children. But you don't do it like some goofball, idiot, dictator. You have to use your head. For example, I'm driving my daughter to school, and she's 15 at the time. I looked over and I said, you know, Hannah, I got to tell you something. You always look nice. You always dress nice. And she says, thanks, Dad. And I said, you don't look like those little sleazeballs down at your school. Well, she looked at me. Her eyes got big. She said, sleazeballs? Dad knows the term sleazeballs. I said, honey, I'm not blind. Those kids dress like Britney Spears. I'm just going to tell you, as your old man, I just got to marvel at the way you always look nice. Well, what have I just said to her? I said, your old senile father has recognized that you take pride in how you look. Now, for all those parents who are chasing self-esteem issues, chubby little Lehman just gave you a mouthful, whether you know it or not. Catch your kids doing some things that are socially appropriate, socially well-accepted, things that you want to see in your kid, and just simply comment on it. That's flipping a commercial announcement.
Let me ask you this. You wrote a book, great title, Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours. That's a funny title, but it's a serious issue. Kevin, tell us, give us an example of a typical mom raising several young children who's frustrated while trying to be a good parent.
Oh, boy, that's an easy one, to tell you the truth. I mentioned Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours. That's the book where I say we've seen the enemy and they're small, and they're unionized. They come out of the womb, and there ought to be a clue from the very first thing we hear a kid say. Wee! And they start crying. Well, I got news for you. They are hedonistic, and there is something to training up a child. There is something to taking the time to train. That Making Children Mind book sold over a million copies for a reason. There's very few books that really, I think, take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and make things happen. Here's the problem, and then I'll answer your question. The problem is that most parents today want happy, happy, happy children. Oh, Dr. Lehman, we're so glad you're with us this evening. Can't wait to hear you speak, because we too want happy, happy, happy children. Hey, parents, why would you like them happy? If you only remember one thing from this whole interview, remember this. An unhappy child is a healthy child.
Interesting.
Our goal is not to create a happy child. Our goal is to create a responsible child. So, parents, are you rearing your kids in a home or a hotel? There's a tremendous difference in those two concepts. And if you're rearing your kids in a hotel, you do far too many things for them they could do for themselves. You snowplow the roads of life for them. You give them room service, food service, etc. If you're rearing kids in a home, everybody gives back to the family. Now, back to the frustrated parent. Let's say they're on their uncle's boat. It's early fall. It's September. Beautiful day. And you're on the way for a nice cruise, and all of a sudden your four-year-old starts running around the boat making a fool of himself. Won't settle down. And so you say to the kid, now, Connor, if you don't settle down right now, we are not going to go to lunch at your favorite restaurant across the lake. But he just ignores it, keeps going on. Connor, I mean it. Listen, if you don't settle down right now, we are not going to the amusement park tomorrow. Now, there's your typical parent. They threaten, they cajole, and then they don't follow through.
Yes.
Now, I use that example because we're out in the middle of the lake, okay? And when mom says, okay, if you don't settle down right now, we're not going to lunch. Well, I'll bet the uncle, the captain of the boat, is real happy to hear we're not going to have lunch. Any other people on the boat? See, we say things to kids that don't make any sense. And then we wonder why kids don't listen to us. You know, in that situation, mom could have said, Uncle Harold, would you mind turning the the boat around. I know we just got out here, but I don't think Connor's ready to go to lunch with us today. Now, that could have been productive to keep him home from lunch, and he doesn't enjoy the fun with the other people. Mm. The problem is that Mom doesn't go to lunch then either.
Right. She's punished.
So the idea to keep in healthy authority over these kids is really where I like to see a parent. And I'm telling you that if you have positive expectations for your kids and you use any of the reality discipline that I've written about for years, I'm telling you, parents, all you're going to do is be a good parent, and the Midas muffler guarantee of parenting is you can have a great kid.
Hmm.
You have to be a perfect parent, just be a good parent.
Yes. Yes. I brought this up once before, but I'm going to ask you another time question, Kevin. Give practical advice to parents who are listening today, and they're juggling the demands of parenting, work, church, lots of responsibilities. Speak to that parent.
Well, we only have so much time. It's interesting. I did a survey of women and found the number one stressor in a woman's life, these were married women, by the way, were children. The number two stressor was time or lack of time. Us husbands didn't even show up till a third position. And then so interesting I found it to be that women ranked work and housework and money 4, 5, and 6 in the top stressors.
Interesting.
So revisit this. Number one stressor was children. Number two stressor is time or the lack of time. One woman told me her goal this year was to read the newspaper on the day it was published. And the third one is husbands. And so women today are stressed to the gills. 72% of mommies with kids under the age of 18 are in the workplace. So she brings home the bacon, but guess what? She also fries it. So if she doesn't have a husband who's a willing helpmate, then she's going to burn out. It's not going to make it. My daughter, we've got a daughter that's got two little ones. And she and her husband made that tough decision that he was going to be the breadwinner. So when she got pregnant, she worked through her pregnancy, and then she bailed out of the world of work. She was making about as much money as he was. Mm-hmm. Well, they're cutting hot dogs in two today, Skip, trying to make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to make it. But I would say to anybody who's got time crunch, are you inventing this time crunch because you feel the need for things? I would just give you a big admonishment there, folks, that, you know, the smart parent is the one who has the discernment to know the difference between what kids need and what they want.
Hmm.
And if you're just working for things, that's not a great idea, parent. I think you've got to make sacrifices in the name of your children. I think that's been around since day one. And so if you're going to try to please everybody, if you can't say no to that woman that calls you at church, I wrote the book called Pleasers,
mm-hmm.
and I call these women the Martha Luthers because of the great reformers, and they love to please other people, and everybody's got to be happy with them. And I'm just telling you, you're one of those people, lady. You're going to run down. You're not going to make it in life. You're just not.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be all things to all people. So there's got to be a priority system. If you're a person of faith, for example, God ought to come first in your life in all things. And then in terms of people, it ought to be your spouse. And God love those children. They need to be like Avis Rent-A-Car, number two and trying harder. You know, I would lay down my life for any of my kids so they could live. But if you called any of them collect, they would tell you that Mama Bear comes before they and always has been that way. And that's one of the reasons why we're still married and been married forever.
I'm going to ask you about cultural pressure now, Kevin. How do you raise a Christian family in a culture like ours today? How do you raise strong Christian families with the opposition we have?
Well, I'm going to say something straight out. You don't hide your kid under the bushel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I know that temptation. Oh, Dr. Lehman, we send our kid to a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this as loud as I can, Skip. There are Christian schools I wouldn't send a dog to, let alone a child, because they're way, way, way too Pharisee-like in my biased opinion. Good old St. Paul, I never caught his last name, but I know his name's Paul, said something in his book to the Italians about book of Romans.
Right.
Being in the world, but not of the world. The world we live in is not a great place. And yet there's a lot of wonderful people in this world. And kids are going to hear things today when they're 5, 6, 7 years of age that maybe you and I, Skip, didn't hear until we were 15, 16, 17 years of age. They're going to see things that we never saw as a kid growing up. I mean, I think about my sex education. I'm so thankful to my buddy Moonhead Deitch. His dad had a subscription to National Geographic. That's where Moonhead and I got our initial introduction to sexual education. Contrast that today with the Internet, where with one simple touch of a finger on a computer, you can see an image that will be imprinted on a kid's brain for the rest of their life.
Hmm.
The world has changed, but you can't put the kids under a bushel. But you have to use common sense. Earlier in our conversation, I mentioned just in passing the computer. And where is the computer?
Mm-hmm.
Does your kid have their own computer? Is it in their room? It shouldn't be in their room. It ought to be in a central place. Hey, parents, you got to be street smart. There's a history button on it. Hit it.
Yep.
See where your kid is visited. Be a hip parent. Go on MySpace. You'll find me, Kevin Lehman, on MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on there. I want to be a member because I want to know what the kids are saying to each other. And for every parent listening right now, I'm telling you, MySpace.com. Go on it. Sign up for it. Okay?
Okay.
And start snooping around on it and put some of your kids' friends in there. You know, it's not so much what your kids' friends say. It's the things that people post on their sites. I mean, they're just downright offensive. I don't know. You'll be shocked. My son-in-law is a principal of a middle school, and we spent about an hour one night on the computer just taking a look at kids. And these are kids from families of faith. I mean, you cannot believe the filth that we found. I mean, filth that we found on that website on different kids posting this and that and the other thing. So what I'm saying is, you know, you can't hide your kid out, but you got to be a street smart parent and find out what the heck your kid's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got to partner with them, you know. And so if you could just learn to respond to a kid rather than react to them from the time they're little, Skip.
Yep.
Things will go better in their life. I love this example. A little 8-year-old kid comes home and says to his mom, they live in an apartment in Los Angeles, California. And he says, "Mommy, I want a pony." What does a mother say to a kid, 8 years old, lives in an apartment in Los Angeles? "A pony? What is wrong with you? A pony? We live in an apartment. You know, if a bird had your brain, you'd fly sideways." Now, that's a reaction. There's another way you could treat something like that out of a kid's mouth. "Mommy, I want a pony." "Ah, a pony. Can you imagine having your own pony? Can you imagine getting up in the morning, getting on your pony, riding to school, waving to the other kids who are walking to school? Can you imagine being at school and hearing the school, the lunch bell ring, and going down the cafeteria?" "No, you can't go to the cafeteria. You can't. You got to go check on your horse, make sure he's got something to eat and something to drink." "Yeah, but Mom, I can't have a pony because we live in an apartment." The kid will figure it out. Just respond to him.
Beautiful.
We're just so trigger happy to put the kids down. Again, I go back to this point that you gotta come alongside of your son, alongside of your daughter, and let them know you're in this thing together.
Okay, Kevin, what about the single parent then? I mean, that's got to be the toughest job on earth. Give some encouragement to a single parent who's trying to do the work of two people.
Well, God bless the single parents. The people from Tyndale House Publishers, who published several of my books, asked me to do a book on single parenting. I'll tell you exactly what that conversation was like. I said, "No way, I'm not a single parent." And they said, we know that, fat boy, but haven't you worked with hundreds? And I said, well, actually, thousands would be closer to it. Yeah. And they said, then write the book, fat boy. And I went out, and I actually read a bunch of books that were done on single parenting. I was appalled. I thought they treated single parents as second-class citizens. And I said, you know what? I can do better than this. And I called Tyndale, and I said, you know what? I'm gonna do that book. And so when you ask about encouragement, yeah, they need encouragement. There's not a tougher job in the world. But I would tell any single parent, if you find yourself suddenly single, your husband picks up and leaves you or whatever, my first bit of advice would be, A, don't move. In other words, don't pick up the kids and find another place to live. If there's any way you can stay where you are, stay where you are. Mm. Number two, I would say don't badmouth your ex-husband in any way, shape, or form. If you do, you'll regret it. I would tell a single parent, during this time where you're suddenly single, I would strongly suggest you don't date. And on top of that, I would strongly suggest you don't remarry. Mm. Now, I'm telling you, a couple people just almost lost control of their car listening to those words.
They sure did.
But I'm telling you, it's good advice. Because your first responsibility with this curveball in life is to rear these little cubs and get them out of the den. You have to look at the long haul here. I've written books and done video series on blended families. I'm here to tell you, Skip, they don't blend. They collide at best. So the best thing that Mama Bear can do, in like Helen Reddy, you and me against the world kid mentality, is to steady the ship. Don't make any major changes in your life, single mom, for at least a year. And if you have to move in with your parents, okay, then I would suggest you make sure that you are still the parents, that the grandparents do not become the parent. Hmm. And also, I would suggest you form a co-op. A co-op with who? With other single moms who you would trust your very life with. And it goes like this. I'll watch your kids on Tuesday and Thursday night if you watch mine on Monday and Wednesday night. Now, on Monday and Wednesday night, that mom may only want to go and work out or get her nails done or do something as mundane as wash or shopping or whatever, depending upon the age of her kids. But no money's exchanged, just credits. And I'm telling you, as a guy who wrote a book, it's a, you know, well, now it's cheaper, it's in paperback, but I yelled at the publisher. I said, why are we selling this book for $20? If there's one parent in the world that doesn't have 20 bucks for a book, it's a single parent.
Mm.
Then I would say to anybody who's listening, who's lucky enough to be married and have a spouse, be on the lookout for that single parent. Hmm. You know, 82% of all kids in single parent homes live with guess who? They live with their mom's kids.
Yep.
So be in a situation where maybe you could call that single mom and say, you know, I'm going to take my boys to a ball game. Would your kids ever like to come with me on Friday evening? I'd love to be able to take them.
Mm-hmm.
All that does is give single mom one night to herself. I call women Velcro women, Skip, because everybody wants a piece of them. As you so accurately said earlier, there's no tougher job than being a single parent. So there is a book out there. It's called Single Parenting That Really Works. And it's a book that you'll find that has good wisdom for any single parent. So if you know of a single parent, married people, put that book in their hands. It's a very helpful little tool for the single parent.
How many books have you written, Kevin?
31, which might be 30 too many, to tell you the truth. But they keep offering me contracts to write books, so somebody's reading them.
So you have a website. Isn't it called Lehman Books and Videos? Is that a .com or .org?
It's a .com. We tried to get creative, and it just didn't work. So we came up with Lehman Books and Videos. It's long. You got to spell it all out. But if you spell Lehman right, L-E-M-A-N, you'll find not only our books, but information about our cruise. We do a cruise once a year for couples.
With all these books, what's next on your agenda? Do you have a project you're cooking up?
And there's a book coming out, in fact, later this month. And September on entitled Childhood Memories, What Your Childhood Memories Mean and What to Do About It. And then there's another one behind that coming out in February called Have a New Kid by Friday, which talks about how do you turn a kid's behavior around real quickly. And we've touched on a couple of those little concepts today in our short discussions, Kim. But that's basically what I'm up to. We do a cruise once a year in February. This year we go to Puerto Rico and some other places. And so my wife still loves me, and so do the five kids. We've got two grandchildren now, and that's been fun to watch. And so life's good. Wouldn't change a thing about it.
Well, and the Christian community loves you too, Dr. Lehman. We thank you for your contribution, not only with your books, but with your radio program. The best-selling relationship doctor has made house calls in a number of ways, radio, TV, books, etc. We thank you for that, and thanks for being with us today on The Connection.
Hey, my pleasure, Skip. Anytime.